Welcome to the second episode of the Water Worms podcast. I'm Lesa Logvinenko, and I will be a host and facilitator of our discussion today. In our first episode that you can find on the DBDH webpage, we explored how feasibility studies help make aquathermal energy projects possible. We discussed why these early steps are so important for turning ideas into real solutions. Today, we move a step further. We will speak about who actually drives these projects on the ground and how do they actually get funded. Today, we are looking at energy communities and cooperatives and how they play a key role in bringing aquathermal energy to our towns and neighborhoods. So I'm joined by two inspiring guests, Morten Vestergaard, Special Climate and Energy Advisor from Middelfart Municipality in Denmark, and also the president of the National Association of Energy Communities in Denmark. And the second guest is Joachim van Verhem. I can repeat, van Verhem.
Van Wallechem.
Van Wallechem.
Yes.
Who works for 2 years at Energent in Belgium and coordinates the large-scale investment projects at Energent. Both represent local energy cooperatives that are piloting aquathermal solutions within the Water Worms projects. Hi, Morten. Hi, Joachim. Thank you for joining.
Hi, Lesia.
I would like to start our conversation today with a more broad question. Could each of you briefly introduce your cooperative and its main mission? Maybe you, Morten, can start first.
Thanks, Lesia. Happy to do that. Happy to be here. The case of the municipality where I'm working is what I could call a Mickey Mouse project. It's a small project, but it's pretty special, just like Mickey Mouse. A small aquathermal energy project taking heat from a local pond, delivering heat to the citizens' common house, I mean, where people get weddings and have their meetings. What's special is that aquathermal energy is very rare in Denmark due to environmental legislation from a time when global warming was not taken into account.
Thank you. Thank you, Morten. Joachim, can you please do your introduction here?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Alicia. Energent is a citizen energy cooperative in Belgium that was founded 10 years ago by a group of people who wanted a socially just climate transition. They aimed for 100% fossil-free future that leaves no one behind. So at today, we have a base of 2,500 cooperative members, and that makes us one of the largest cooperatives in Belgium, and we are in the top three in Europe for citizen-led renovations. It's actually one of our core missions to actively implement the transition away from fossil fuel-based heating. So we do this by offering renovation advice, and we focus on developing and operating large-scale energy projects.
Thank you, Joachim. Both cases look very interesting, and I would like to go deeper into discussion. So my next question would be, again, to both of you. What does an energy community and cooperative look like in practice? How they function? Who are the members? How they are organized? So I have plenty of questions, and maybe each of you can touch base on what you believe would be more interesting for our listeners. Joachim, your energy community looks like a bigger one, so maybe you can start answering this question. Thank you.
Yeah, yes, you're right, Lisha. So Energent is in fact organized as a company as it is today. So it actually starts with a group of people, but they grew to the size of a company. So we have a board of directors and we have 14 employees working here in our offices at Energent. That's the company side, I think, of Energent, but I think what makes us special and different is that we have a strong community building. So we actually involve all our stakeholders, 2,500 stakeholders, in different ways. So for example, we have our general meeting every year where they can contribute, where they can raise questions, give their opinion on what we do, and which direction we should head to. So it's also with voting. So we really listen to what our stakeholders want. We also have persons working here at Innerhands really focusing on that aspect. So we are writing monthly newsletters about the ins and outs of Innerhands, so people know what we are actually doing. And another important thing is that we have a lot of volunteers that we can involve in our work. So they bring ideas, they bring expertise. And I think these are things that makes us different from a regular company.
Thank you, Joachim. I can see that you put a lot of efforts in building up transparency and creditworthiness in your energy community. Morten, do you have the same in your case, or is it like organized a little bit different?
I think we are at a little different place in Denmark. Energy communities is rather new in many ways in Denmark, and it's evolving really fast. I mean, what's in common for all the Danish energy communities is that they are different, from small solar PV projects on bicycle sheds to sea-based wind turbine parks, like 100 megawatt. So they're very, very different, composed by ordinary people like you and me, school teachers, mechanics, professors, whatever. It's so popular, you could say, that reality is outrunning the updates of necessary legislation. Sort of like a child growing out of its clothes.
So Morten, how are they structured? How do they organize themselves?
In Denmark, we are organized mostly as not-for-profit utilities, like we know from district heating. The difference is that with the energy community, we are working with electricity, geothermal heating, and of course, aquathermal energy. So we had a wider scope of things to work with.
Okay, that's interesting. Talking to both of you, I can see that local energy community can be a really an important part of the green transition, and especially with cases like aquathermal energy. What do you think about that? I mean, how people can move green transition in smaller or larger scale?
Morten?
Yeah.
I mean, my opinion, I mean, as working at a municipality, I can see a lot of politicians say you can get involved and you can answer this or that question regarding a wind turbine park. But people, they want to participate. They want to build this up in their backyards. They want to say, yes, in my backyard. And they do this by participating, making their own energy projects and doing their own energy communities. So politics in climate change is too slow, in my opinion. People are ready, and energy communities can speed up action in real life and make sympathy for the green transition.
Okay,
yeah,
Martin.
I really support that, because especially for district heating systems, I think that's always a local story, because it doesn't have the ability to extend hundreds of kilometers. So that's always a local story. So these projects shouldn't only be developed by large corporations with headquarters, sometimes even abroad. So I think that should really stay local. And beyond that, I think people should also feel proud that this energy essentially comes from their own backyards and not from 10,000 kilometers away.
That's true. That's a possibility, but also a limitation, so to say, for this kind of project. But I would like to connect my next question to WaterWarm's pilot project and ask about the specific role your two pilots play within WaterWarm's project. Could you please describe it? Maybe you can, Joachim, you can start first.
Well, Lisha, our pilot and water warmth project is currently in the feasibility study phase. This means that we are working towards a fully developed technical and economic plan where we involve all the stakeholders and incorporate their inputs. And I think what we do different is that we here think a bit outside the box instead of just following the classic approach. So what do I mean with that? So is that because we have to create, in our case, a proposal, an economic, a technical proposal that offers everyone more benefits than if each individually transition away from fossil fuels at their own place. So we have to deal with local residents, with large projects. So and each one has to see their own benefit of it. Yeah.
I would like, you know, to ask you about the model, how you finance this project, because most of your projects in Enerhant are financed by the members, right? But the projects like aquathermal energy is I would say demand more financing. So as I understood, Waterworms help with funding this kind of so to say bigger projects, if I may use this word. Please correct me.
Our project within Waterworms is supported by Waterworms for the feasibility study phase. So we don't get support for the actual implementation because we are not there yet. We are not yet at the financial close where it's actually needed to get more capital. So we still have a lot of work ahead. But anyway, the way we plan to raise funds, I think that will be similar to our other district heating projects. So we have one small district heating project where we raise funds by means of raising a capital call to our stakeholders where they can invest in a certain project. And for the aquathermal case, that could be that part of the money that is needed, that they will be able to invest in it.
Okay, great. Thank you, Joachim. I think that we can go with this discussion further in our second part of the podcast. And here I would like to also to involve Morten and hear Morten's experience and Middelfart's experience, how to get started with aquathermal energy. What was the story about that? That I know it sounds exciting. Morten, please.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it started with the citizens being frustrated. I mean, they needed cheap, clean, green heating. And we were working with them as a municipality, and it was a good story going bad because bureaucracy almost totally destroyed the local engagement.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And you know, if we were taking heat out from geothermal or whatever, that was not really the big issue. But aquathermal energy came up as a super solid solution. And fortunately, and this is important when you're working with startups, we found the project Waterworms, thank you to the European Union. And even if we're fighting for this Mickey Mouse project, as I call it, a small pond and one house, it seems like it's going to be a fairy tale coming true with aquathermal heating for the citizens.
And hopefully a showcase for future projects.
Yes.
Okay. And how is it moving within Waterworms project? Are you what have you learned so far about implementation? How it may help to other communities?
I would say the best thing is that it's real and it's concrete. It might be small, but it showcases that if you have courage, curiosity and stamina, you can get stuff done. But I mean, it also for sure helps if you have the mindset like this Swedish girl with the superpowers, Pippi Longstocking, you know her?
Yeah.
Pippi Longstocking, superpower girl. She has a motto: I haven't tried this before, so of course I can do it.
Great. We shortly discussed the challenges, and of course bureaucracy is one of them. How do you see what solutions could be found for that? How to tackle those challenges, Morten? What do you think? Because I think you have many of them, and you are tackling them every day.
Well, I mean, looking at the future and financing of these projects, I think for sure it's realistic. We should work more on giving small cooperatives some advantages, just like we're giving existing utilities, the big ones, advantages. I mean, release some demands for bureaucracy. This is often, you know, ordinary people working with this, and financial options for conducting like feasibility studies for these startups. I think we can learn a lot about public guarantees for loans from like the Danish district heating system. Basically, it will give not-for-profit options really long payback times, like 20, 30 years, and many of these projects need long payback times.
Thank you, Morten. I think like Middelfart can be seen as Mickey Mouse project, but Enerhant could be compared to Elephant because Joachim, you have a well established structure, I believe, and still I believe you are facing challenges. Do you have a kind of recipe how you deal with them?
Indeed, it's way bigger. In fact, it started small and it grew larger and larger. A bit the opposite, sorry, Martin. how I approached is that I started small and I informed all people I could inform. So I gathered all the stakeholders which were actually in place there, because we will be operating once it is in place on public domain with all different stakeholders from different people. So I involved them all: architects, social housing, city development, neighborhoods. They were all involved, and it took a long time. It actually took me, I think, 2 years to inform them about what it will be, what is aquathermal energy, what are the benefits, and why, what's in it for them, where is the win-win situation for everyone. That took me a long time, but I think now we are at that point that everybody understands the story and that we can go to the next phase to get things done, actually.
But that's great, and I think we are moving to the financing part of our podcast, which is pretty much exciting, and here we can have more discussion on that. And my question would be, looking at the future, who do you think should finance these kind of projects? I know in Enerhant you have a certain financing scheme where you involve the financing from your cooperative members. Morten, in your case, it's more an external financing, as I understood. So how do you see how the future looks like for the projects like this? Morten, if you could start first, please.
Well, for sure, I think we should have we should learn more from the lessons from the public guarantees, how we can onboard frameworks from this to inspiring new startups within energy communities. Basically, we should give communities that are not for profit the options to get loans with long payback times, so they can make their longer and larger investments. So basically, I think we should just treat energy communities as front running green startups that we really want a lot of in our society. And financially and economically, they can work. I mean, we can show and demonstrate plenty of feasibility studies. And with these in hand, we should open up the bank opportunities for this.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Morten. Joachim, what do you think?
Well, definitely I support what you're saying, Morten, in a way that we here in Belgium, we also advocate for a development fund, because developing heat grids has a long development time. Several years, and small energy cooperatives do not have the means to finance that. So we really advocate to the governments to provide funds to cover that period. So they can actually start. And once the project is started, they just pay it back by a loan. But I also see another source of potential money available, especially, for example, here in Belgium, if you look to how many subsidies go to fossil fuel, here in Belgium, it's 13 billion every year.
Wow.
Fossil fuel subsidies. If only a fraction would go to accelerate the green transition, that would really be a huge step forward. Only a fraction of the 13 billion. So there is a lot. The money is there, but it's part of that is at the wrong place.
Thank you. So what you are saying, Joachim, is that money is in place, so that part of it should be redirected in the right direction.
Definitely. Yeah.
And you could, I mean, put on that. I mean, I'm totally in favor of this. I mean, just stop for subsidizing fossil fuel. The next thing, I mean, when we're talking about giving options for energy to communities to get these bank guarantees and loans, some would say, isn't this risky business? And I'm saying, no, it's not risky business if you know what you're doing. You have these feasibility plans like everyone else. But I mean, the difference is that when a local energy community comes and says, we want to make a solar PV plant, can you give us the finance options as a developer? It should be even easier because they are often coming with a yes in my backyard attitude. That's not always the case when it's a big developer. Then it may turn the wrong way. I mean, not in my backyard. So I think there's a lot of advantages that could make it go a lot easier.
Thank you, Morten. But also, let me ask you, do you believe that energy community should be organized as a profitable case, or should it be like non-profit, like in Denmark, like your case? Because, well, I mean, it can be a kind of incentive, as I understand, the Enerhant follows this scheme, partially, of course. So what do you think?
Well, I mean, at the moment, we are working according to a lot of the European legislation. We're following the not-for-profit. And what turned out under the big energy crisis, I think it was EcoPower from Belgium that showed that while the energy crisis was making very, very high prices for everyone, the prices for energy communities were stable. And I think this is really interesting. I mean, you have your payments, you know it, and this is just as good in many cases as making a profit. The profit was stable prices, and this is also a big advantage.
That's true. Joachim, what do you think about that?
Indeed, also Energent is gain driven, but is profit driven, but not in a way as a regular company. So we make investments, but we do this carefully, and we really look for investment projects that really fit with us and that give us a long term revenue. We don't aim for the quick wins, but we aim for the long-term revenue, so we can actually provide to our stakeholders a constant revenue to the capital that they have given. It's a bit similar story, Morten, you mentioned from EcoPower. That's our philosophy. That's the philosophy of all energy corporations here in Belgium.
Thank you, Joachim. But do you think there is a need for more governmental support to make this project viable, especially in place where the market may not be ready yet, just like with aquathermal energy projects?
I think I speak for our case that it doesn't help as it is now that subsidy schemes, that they only last, for example, for a few years, or that the rules change over time, or that the available money runs out. So because heat, district heating is really a long-term perspective, you are not helped with short-term subsidies or short-term help. We really need a long-term perspective, and that will actually facilitate and accelerate how energy corporations can bring value.
Do you agree, Morten?
Absolutely. I mean, if we would give energy communities and green, clean energy, renewable energy, same conditions as fossil fuel, I mean, we would come a long way. We could quote another small Swedish girl. I'm not going to mention who, but I mean, the planet is burning. I mean, we're in a deep climate crisis. Of course, we should try to get out of this mess. And energy communities, aquathermal energy is a part of the solution. Yes.
Great. Thank you, Morten. Thank you, Joachim. And I would like to conclude this very interesting discussion we have today with the last question. Could you share with our listeners one piece of advice? Thinking about aquathermal energy, what would it be? What are the lessons learned? Morten, please.
Well, I mean, I mentioned before, when you're doing something new, courage, curiosity, and stamina is important. But where do you get the enthusiasm? I've learned a lot from people like you, Lesia, from Joachim. I can see a lot of the energy communities are learning a lot from, you know, networking with each other. Learning from each other, networks is number one. And when you're doing this, remember to celebrate when something is going good. Remember to celebrate your victories.
That's a big part of encouragement. Thank you. Joachim, what would be your piece of advice?
Yeah, I really support that. I think we should always work together with partners. We don't have to do it alone. Eh? And even when you're not in the lead of a project, try to be a partner and bring value as an energy corporation to the consortium. And we don't have to wait until everything is perfect, but we can just start small, but start, learn along the way and build step by step. I think that's how we have to tackle that.
Thank you so much, Morten and Joachim, for sharing your experiences and lessons from Middelfart and Enerhand. It's really inspiring to hear how local people can take ownership of the green transition and make innovative technologies like aquathermal energy a reality. And again, a good recipe from our speakers today: start small, but just start. Don't wait until everything is perfect. And please follow this advice if you want to have a successful project. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for the new episode where we will keep exploring how WaterWarm's partners are creating new pathways to sustainable heating across Europe. Thank you.